And now we want to take a look at the broader question of mental health services available to immigrant communities. That's an issue, of course, that we're talking about after the mass shooting at the American Civic Association in Binghamton, New York last week. For more on this, we decided to turn to Courtney Prentice. She's the director of Catholic Charities Community Services Southside in St. Louis. Also with us is clinical psychologist Jane Delgado, who is president and CEO of the National Alliance for Hispanic Health. Welcome to you both. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Courtney, I wanted to start with you because your organization provides a range of services for immigrants in St. Louis, including mental health treatment. I wanted to ask you about some of the mental health issues that your clients are dealing with and how those might be different from the general population, the general patient population.
I think what we see at Southside is quite a bit of mental health issues that are tied really to trauma due to the immigration experience, due to what has occurred in the countries of origin. So a lot of what we do is really trauma-informed care.
And could you tell me what you mean by that? We've, on this program, talked about the fact that there are, perhaps more than many Americans might realize, a number of immigrants who come here because who have been subjected to torture or who have been exposed to very high levels of violence. What are you talking about when you say trauma?
When I say trauma, it's, well, what you just described. But also something to keep in mind, especially when we talk about refugees, is that right now the resettlement time here in the United States is shorter. But what is longer is the time that many of the refugees are having to spend in the resettlement camps. Those are not very pleasant experiences to be in. And now that so many of the families are coming in and are having children in those camps, and the children, their first exposure is to living in those camps, that in and of itself can be a very traumatizing experience. Basic survival is really the name of the game, to put it simply. But when we talk about immigrants who are not refugees but are coming of their own volition, the process of immigration unto itself, the crossing of a border, the separation from family can be highly traumatizing. And what can occur in that crossing, be it sexual assaults, physical assaults, that can be a very difficult process. So consequently, we see clients who are having flashbacks, who are having difficulty sleeping, and consequently, it becomes difficult to function on a daily basis.
Jane, I know that as a psychologist, you don't want to evaluate people whom you have not seen, but when you see a story like the Jivoli Wong story, where people tell you, the people who've been interviewed who were in his life say, I knew there was something wrong. I knew he had this anger. I knew he was very angry about his life. And there are people who were even quoted as saying, I'm not surprised that this happened. How do you read that? What do you think would have made a difference in this case, just knowing what it is that you know about it from a distance?
I think the most important thing is that people need to know that that kind of behavior and feelings are not ones that we should just let pass, that there are places to go for help and that there are things they can do. Very often people want to help but don't know what to do. The other thing with mental health is that people think everyone should get over it, thinking that this is something that can all just pass, that if you just suck it up, that you should be able to get to another place. And that is part of the problem.
Are there aspects of the immigration process that are inherently traumatic that perhaps we don't talk very much about?
I think people have to realize that when you leave your home and go someplace else, you're uprooting who you are, your networks, your social supports. So in that, there's trauma. People think, well, people are here because they want to be here. Well, nobody wants to leave their home and their roots and their family. So if they leave, there's always some degree of trauma. To that, you have to add a secondary level, which is the people who not only have trauma, but who have witnessed abuse, violence, or experienced it. And that makes it even harder, because then you have the dissonance that in your own country, these horrible things happened. You're going to a place which, even though they're accepting you as a refugee or as a legal immigrant, some of the people don't act thrilled to see you. So it's a lot of difficulty, adjustment, trauma. It makes it hard for people.
Obviously, people come from all kinds of different cultures, contexts, levels of education, exposure to various kinds of ways of dealing with these kinds of issues. But nationally, Jane, do you have a sense of whether in the array of or patchwork of services available to immigrants that there is some sort of a network of mental health services available to immigrants across the country?
Well, let's be accurate. There's not a network of mental health services available to all people in the United States. There are some services for people who are chronically mentally ill, but even those are patchy. We don't treat mental health issues the way we treat physical health issues, and we don't treat physical health issues that well unless you are very affluent and have concierge service. So I think that in terms of mental health, it's patchy in the U.S., and if you're an immigrant, it's even worse. Because not only do you not have access to services, but in fact, you may come from a point of view where you don't feel that you should be accessing services because there's stigma involved in other aspects like that.
Courtney, one of the things that your program does, that you conduct therapy sessions in the primary language of the patient, if you can. As my understanding is that many of the patients coming to your services are Spanish-speaking or primary Spanish speakers, and that they are able to get therapy in Spanish. Why is that important?
That's correct. All of our therapists speak Spanish so that the client has the ability to express truly what they feel and what they think. And that makes such a difference in the care, because what you're doing then is you're allowing that person to be authentic, to express what's going on, to use their own words, literally.
Jane talked about the whole sense of stigma that some people are coming with. I mean, a lot of native-born Americans have that stigma, as Jane was, pointing out about the whole issue of mental health is so fraught. But then she also mentioned that there's this whole issue of some people feel guilty about accessing services or feel for whatever reason they shouldn't be. How do you overcome those things, Courtney? How do you get people to access the services that they need? What kind of outreach do you do?
That's right, that it's not unique to one culture, that mental health isn't always readily accepted. What we've worked very, very diligently at is outreach into the community, in the sense that not just an awareness of the availability of services, but the understanding of those services. I like to think of it as you could know that there's a grocery store at the corner, but if you don't know what's in that grocery store or why that might be helpful to you, you're not going to go to it. So what we spend a great deal of time and have done is going into communities, going into places that are recognized as safe, and conducting workshops or outreach. So for instance, years ago when we were first starting, we were invited to a parish that was primarily Latino. And over the holiday time, what we came and talked about was depression during the holidays. And that a lot of people don't want to talk about. This is supposed to be a very happy time. You're supposed to be feeling really good. And we talked about, what happens when you're away from your family, when you're in a place that your traditions don't necessarily make sense, quote unquote. And that allowed people to kind of feel safe talking about these feelings and these experiences. And then to kind of begin in that conversation to introduce this idea that, there's another place where you can even go further with this if you'd like. You can talk about these things if you'd like. So, again, making this normalized and allowing people to understand what those services are and are not.
And, Jane, as you've pointed out, a lot of people are under stress in this country right now. People from all walks of life are very anxious about the economic circumstances. But given that, do you have any advice for people right now who might be listening who are having these anxious feelings? If there's something you can just, tell people as a takeaway about how they can address it safely, particularly if they're worried about themselves or someone they know.
I think what people have to do is give themselves a moment to just sort of come into themselves and to relax. When you have a lot of anxiety and tension and you just let it build up, that's like having a pot that's just, you just let it get hotter and hotter and hotter. So you need to have something you do that's a timeout for you. We actually had a door knocker campaign that we gave people these door knockers and says, please give me the gift of time, which is sometimes you just need to give people some private time. Also, reach out to those people who can support you. It may be family, maybe friends, it may be your other social networks, or if you're part of a faith community, to reach out to that. But you don't have to do it on your own. A lot of people are under stress, and it's okay to get help.
Courtney, I wanted to give you the final thought here. I wanted to ask if there are are there aspects of the program that you run in St. Louis that you would like to see replicated elsewhere? And what would it take to do that?
Jane brought up a really good point, which is this idea of How do we look at this long term? And I think about what we've done in terms of diabetes education. We've done a really good job in this country and continue to educate individuals that this is a lifelong condition and it takes management and understanding of it and self-awareness. And I think if we approach mental health in a similar way, that could be really powerful. So if we said, you can live with this condition or with this diagnosis, but it takes some support and it takes some understanding of that. I think that that can be phenomenal. When I think of what we could do with our program, we right now service families from over 55 different zip codes. I would like to think that there are more providers across this area that could build their capacity to service this community as well.
Courtney Prentice is the director of Catholic Charities Community Services Southside in St. Louis. She joined us from the studios of KWMU in St. Louis. Jane Delgado is a clinical psychologist and the president of the National Alliance for Hispanic Health, and she was kind enough to join us in our Washington, D.C. studios. I thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Today we've heard stories from immigrants who are trying to make it in America, and now we want to hear from you. Do you think the American dream is still within your grasp, whether you were born here or somewhere else? To tell us more, call our comment line at 202-842-3522. That number again is 202-842-3522, or visit our website at the Tell Me More page at npr.org and blog it out.